Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A warning now that our next conversation contains references to domestic violence, rape, and murder. It's not suitable for younger or vulnerable ears. In 2020, 21-year-old show jumper Katie Simpson died unexpectedly, and the majority of the horse community accepted that she had taken her own life. While the Police Service of Northern Ireland initially treated her death as suicide, her family started to raise questions about the direction of the original police probe, and the case was eventually upgraded to a murder investigation. A show jumping trainer by the name of Jonathan Creswell, age 36, died in 2024 while on trial for Katie Simpson's murder. I'm joined now by investigative journalist and author Nicola Tallant, whose new book is called Groomed, subtitled Coercion, Control and a Cold-Blooded Murder, which gives an insightful account of this case. Nicola, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this is an extraordinary story because the perpetrator, well, he cannot be brought to justice.
He can't, because the second day of his trial, he was facing a murder charge in relation to the death of Katie Simpson, who was his sister's younger partner. Second day, the trial opened and no sign of him. And then news came in that he had been found dead in his bail address. So he sort of, there was no justice really, I suppose, for Katie. And then there was three women who were facing charges for helping him cover up the death, albeit they didn't know he'd murdered her. He had told them that he'd given her a beating the night before she was she died, and that he thought that would look bad from the PSNI. So they did various things. So they were left to carry the can, really.
I think we should go back in time, though, to Creswell when he was a young fella.
Yeah.
He was in the equestrian world. But what was his background?
So his background was he was born to a young mother in Derry. She was a teenage mother. And she had had this relationship with an older gentleman who was sort of a landed, well-to-do farmer who ended up owning a big stud farm in Donegal.
Now, he had a family.
He had a family, but it was his mother, Donna, had helped rearing him by her own parents and family. And I think a baby coming into the home was quite joyous for them ultimately. And his own father then, Herbie Lusby, didn't exactly turn his back on him. He always kept a watching eye over him. And
did he financially support them?
Yeah, he seemed to have helped him out with the sport of show jumping. Anything to do with equestrian is very expensive. So he did help out. And also when Johnny Creswell wanted to go to Donegal, he wanted to get out of the north for a particular reason, his father took him in.
Mm. Now, the equestrian world, this was a young fellow who decided to leave school, that there was only one thing he wanted to do, that was work with horses. And he saw that the pinnacle in that sport was a possibility for him. He was very ambitious.
Yeah, he was. And actually, if you delve back into the setup of Horse Racing Ireland and all the rest of it, it does provide a lot of employment in rural areas. And in a lot of cases, you find that people who aren't brilliant academically, they will show, you know, strengths around the equestrian industry, and they find employment. There's a lot of employment for people like Johnny Creswell who do drop out of school. You know, they become stable hands. They learn to jump. And ultimately, he did point to point, which was thrilling and fast. And, you know, he was a huntsman as well. And he loved that, hanging on for dear life.
So he had a talent, I mean, and he won competitions.
I mean, it was described to me, I don't know a huge amount about that world, but it was described to me that he almost sat awkwardly in the saddle, that he mightn't have been a naturally brilliant horseman, but he hung on for dear life. And that suited, obviously, over the jumps and the speed of that and everything else. If you can hang on, you're not going to get injured.
Now, even as a young fellow, as a teenager, it turned out he had another talent, and that was a talent for the ladies.
Yeah, and amazingly, like, you know, boys 15, 16 are usually full of, they're awkward, really, aren't they? They don't have much confidence. He did, and he was able to charm the sort of the mothers of young girls who were show jumping, and he was able to charm women his own age. But he was also in a relationship at that stage, 16, with a woman who was like in her early 20s, which is a big gap then. And a girl called Jill Robinson, who subsequently would plead guilty to helping him cover up in the death of Katie Simpson. But she was mesmerised by him, and he held the power in that relationship, which again is extraordinary.
As a teenager, being able to have this control over a woman in her 20s, the fact that he's no longer with us, we can't really get a sense of that personality. In the course of your research, did you understand where that charm lay?
He was a very divisive character. So people either loved him or hated him. There was very little in between. He was somebody who didn't really comfortably have a group of men friends. It was always women that he was surrounded with. He was flirtatious and outrageous, and he would come out with things that sometimes people walked away going, did he actually say that? You know, very crude. And but I think for the women that he did charm, it was this thing that he was above on top of a horse, and he was almost like a rock star in that world. And the jockeys do seem to hold a little bit of that sort of status, and when they're particularly good, which he was.
Now, he had multiple relationships with women along the way before we come to the woman that he murdered, and the nature of that relationship will become clear as we talk. Was there any evidence of abuse in those other relationships?
Abby Lyle, who is somebody who represented Ireland in the dressage in Versailles last year in the Olympics, is very articulate about it. And she describes how he was so horrible to her that the moment that he was nice again, it just made everything feel better. And it's like almost a skill to be able to bully, to hurt, to be violent to somebody and then to bring them back. And it's the bringing them back is the skill. You know, she eventually was pushed too far and she ran away. But he seemed to be like a puppet master with the other women.
And of course, he was reported to the police.
He served time for a horrendous attack on Abby Lyle. He brought her to Castle Leslie, to the grounds. He told her of Castle Leslie in Monaghan over the border. And he savagely beat her over a course of hours. He was sweating so much in the cold night that he had to take his shirt off. He strung her up a tree. It was horrendous what he did to her. He nearly killed her.
This provided an opportunity because he'd moved her across the border that there were charges that could be brought.
Well, there was charges brought in the north, but it was slightly different then because, you know, coercive control is maybe more understood now. So you can bring it as a package, things. Whereas then they had to go for the individual incidents that could be identified. So you couldn't form a pattern with it. So he pleaded guilty ultimately to, a selection of charges, and he only really served 3 months in prison. But it was still a conviction, a serious conviction. It was there. Moving on, 5 years later, he exposes himself in a horse yard in the north. There's a complaint made. The PS&I are supposed to be looking for him to question him. He moves in and out freely of Northern Ireland and they don't ever catch up with him.
And yet he might be billed to be appearing at a particular show.
Completely.
And therefore was gettable, but he was never got.
Yeah. And, you know, this was described in a bail hearing later. We heard all this in court that they had tried desperately. But, I mean, I was able to go back and look and see where he was. He was in the winner's enclosure sometimes, you know, because it's all advertised, obviously.
Yeah.
They're riding on someone else's horse and it's all about if the horse wins, it goes up a notch and it's more valuable and all the rest of it. But yeah, so that was 2015. He's living over the border with his father's property. There's concerns there because there's lots of women around him. They don't really like the way he's living. He's filthy dirty. He doesn't seem to be able to put a bin out. They literally fall down in the clothes they're out in. And there's a lot of women around him. So ultimately...
And what do they find so appealing about this rather dirty man?
Well, I mean, I don't know, you know.
It's a big question.
It is a big question.
Reading your book, it is a question that kept prompted itself to me all the time.
I think some of them are sort of this coercive control, if we can understand it. It is fascinating that a human being is able to control another human being now through violence and through sort of, I suppose, bullying or whatever. But they are younger women. I think sometimes some of them have given him so much they just keep giving, because especially Hayley Robb, who was one of his girlfriends on the side, And I say about her a girlfriend because she was 17, 18 when she met him. I don't ever describe Katie as that, because Katie was groomed, certainly, we understand, from when she was 10 years of age. She was his sister's partner. There's been a lot of narrative in the whole story that they were in a relationship or they were having an affair.
So talk to me about the Simpson sisters and how he became involved with the older sister, first of all.
Yeah, he was working in a yard near where they lived in Tynan, a very small little village on the border I'd never been to. Pretty much that was what was there, the yard, the horses. And those kids, you know, growing up, were lured to the beautiful horses, as all girls want a pony. And, you know, they'd go into the yard, like everybody in the area, and they might muck out and they'd get a free ride on the horses or whatever. And eventually they sort of, their mother bought them a horse between them. There was three sisters. So Christina starts to get involved in a relationship with him as he's in trouble for Abbey Lyle. You know, he's gone to prison and she's there, and certainly they're in the relationship when he comes out of prison.
So she's well aware that he's been to prison.
Well, she's well aware, but he spun a story that seemed to have been believed, that, you know, she was jealous of him. But he was very convincing and people believed that. And, you know, he was denying everything. And then, of course, he pleads guilty. And you'd wonder, could people still believe him? But they did, because he said he only pleaded guilty to save her, that he didn't want to have to, you know, her to give evidence against him in court. And sure, look, he'd suck it up and go away to prison. So he comes back out and he's sort of empowered, because nobody has, and he's more women than ever, you know. So Christina starts in the relationship with him. She's young too. She's only about 16 at that stage. And, you know, her little sister comes into company with him in the, you know, he's in their family home, I suppose, and he's in the yard. And Katie wants to be a show jumper. That's her ambition in life. So she spends more and more and more and more time with him. She had a frightening amount of hospital. You know, she's going into A&E with various broken bones.
And of course, when you're riding horses, that you fall off, and these injuries can happen.
They can, but I think, funny enough, that people who are good and who are employable don't fall off.
Now, initially, it wasn't thought that she was murdered. So what happened after that to change the course of the investigation?
I mean, I think that's the biggest failing, really. You know, people looked away at what happened. You know, friends of hers betrayed her. But the PS&I investigation into this is frightening in the extreme, because he presented her at hospital. In actual fact, he brought her halfway along the road and met with the ambulance. There was a lot of red flags. Hospital staff raised them, members of her family raised them, and others. But the police believed him. They believed that she had tried to take her own life.
A guy with a criminal record,
yeah,
they believed.
They believed, yeah, a guy with a criminal record. And they missed an awful lot of kind of opportunities in the early days. This mindset seemed to have set in, and the police ombudsman has described it subsequently, that it was this, there was a lack of an inquiring mind. They just believed his story. And what was really sick was he was at her bedside. I mean, her heart had stopped. And she was on life support, and her mother was there beside, and her sisters, but so was he, whispering in her ear as she was, you don't know whether people have any brain function or not, but the idea that he was there when she was dying, and he lowered her into her grave, you know, having convinced, without a very convincing story, everybody, that she had taken her own life.
So what changed?
So what changed was, there was a journalist, a local journalist called Tanya Fowles, who knew of the story, knew and had been there during the first case where Creswell, she heard the evidence of what had happened.
So she knew he was a bad lot.
Not only that, but she could just see the pattern. The same thing had happened. Katie, she'd been taken over the border that night, etc., etc. Her phone was missing. It was all these things that would have been part of his MO. And she just kept at it and at it and at it. And others too kept ringing up and demanding that, you know, this case be looked at again. And eventually there's this peculiar thing that can happen in the north. I don't think it happens here. Another police district can investigate a case over a 24, 48-hour period. And if they think that it is possibly, you know, incorrectly investigated by the original, so Derry police, it was Armagh police, came in, threw an eye over the whole investigation. And by the end of that weekend, which was 6 months later, or 4 or 5 months later, a murder inquiry was launched. And very quickly, Creswell was arrested and charged. Like, this wasn't rocket science.
It's very interesting, that idea that a neighbouring police force can come in and investigate something, because often, you know, communities are small, everyone knows everybody, and they might, you know, inadvertently look away.
Well, you can be failed by bad policing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously the PS&I will defend themselves on that, and the Gardaí would defend themselves on that. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes the wrong people are in the job or at the top of the tree, and you can be unlucky sometimes.
So he's arrested, he's charged, and the court case begins. How compelling do you think the evidence was? I mean, was it likely there would have been a conviction?
Well, it was a circumstantial case, actually. So, you know, whether there was a conviction, I do think that one of the women that he was in a relationship, the aforementioned Hayley Robb, she eventually does come forward. And she tells, and she becomes a state witness. She's going to give evidence against him. She's very brave, really. And she does find it in her to go and tell the truth. The case was going ahead, the murder case was going ahead, without the police, the second wave of investigators, having the knowledge that he actually tried to cover up, or that people, these other women, helped them. Hayley Robb, as such, became a whistleblower. I think her evidence would have been vital in the case. Without it, a lot of it didn't make sense. She gave the narrative. She told the story of what happened and why. And she was going to be very damaging to him ultimately, even though he had taken years of her life through fear and coercion. She was going to be very, very important. So I think probably you would have got a conviction, but it would have been a fight, as all circumstantial cases are. They're not black and white, you know.
Anyway, he took it out of everybody's hands by taking his own life.
He did. And actually, you see, what happened was, I think when they went to investigate, when he was arrested on foot of murder, the second police investigation believed that they had the smoking gun, which was, they had his DNA. It was clear that they had had a sexual encounter, and they put it to him, expecting him to deny it. And he said, oh yeah, sure, we're in a relationship. And that was a bit of a moment where they went, well, we better get more evidence. So, you know, the second police investigation probably wasn't perfect either, but it was better
than the original.
Than the original. But ultimately, he was out on bail, and he was had an ability to take the whole thing out of everybody's hands.
What was the aftermath of all of this? I mean, in terms of the Horsey community, what was the feeling after he took his own life?
It's actually very interesting, because I've had a lot of communication from people within that world of late. They seem to be rather fascinated by the story of Johnny Creswell. I think it's a very dark story, and it is something that, like, if you knew of somebody, if it was in our industry, for example, we'd be totally horrified, and it's so unbelievable. But I think probably ultimately they should, and people do, are still calling for them to have a look at their industry, because there's a lot of girls in lonely stables, and, you know, there's this power imbalance thing going on. And like all sports, it seems to me that every sport has people attracted to these sports that, you know, can be bad.
Well, the book is called Groomed, subtitled Coercion, Control and a Cold-Blooded Murder. It's written by Nicola Tallant. It's available everywhere. Nicola, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Pat.
And if you've been affected by anything from that conversation, you can call the Rape Crisis Centre free phone 24 hours, 1-800-77-8888, or in Northern Ireland, 0800-024-6991.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.